This is Lucy Atherton, Head Librarian at Wellington College, and welcome to our very first Wellington College Desert Island Books and Discs. This is our adapted version of the long-standing and hugely popular Desert Island Disc Radio 4 programme, which freelance broadcaster Roy Plumley came up with in 1941. It was first aired in the Forces programme in January 1942, recorded in the BBC's bomb-damaged Maida Vale studio. It was introduced to the listening public as a programme in which a well-known person is asked the question, if you were to be cast away alone on a desert island, which 8 gramophone records would you choose to have with you? Assuming, of course, that you had a gramophone and an inexhaustible supply of needles. We're mixing up the format a bit, and Wellington College Desert Island Books and Discs will permit each castaway to choose 8 favourite books to take along and the usual 8 discs. As this is our first slightly experimental attempt, my first castaway is my husband, Richard Atherton, head of the International Baccalaureate and a maths teacher. The main aim is to share some reading recommendations rather than a This Is Your Life, but you will get to hear his taste in music on the live radio programme, although this isn't possible on the podcast. Okay, Richard Atherton, maths teacher and director of IB, let's talk books and music. I'm going to cast you away onto a desert island, but I'm going to ask you for the first book that you feel you couldn't do without on this island. You're going to have 8 books you can take, but then we force you down to 1. But right now, what would you say would your first book you'd like to take with you?
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams. I remember my brother listening to the radio series with my dad. The radio series is the basis for the play the school has just put on. And they loved it, but I didn't listen. And I read the book a couple of years later. It is very much a book for nerds, which I am.
But I do. Our daughter has just read it, and she didn't think she'd like it, but she did find it amusing and enjoyed it as well, didn't she? So that was surprising.
He is so brilliant with words. He's written a dictionary, literally written a dictionary of funny words. And so every sentence is beautifully crafted, and it's just brilliant.
And there are 3 books, or are there 4 books in the trilogy?
Yes, he says The increasingly badly named trilogy of 5 books, I think.
And which one ends with "So long and thanks for all the fish"?
I don't
know. One of the books, but it's very humorous. Excellent. And what's your first record you'd like to take with you?
Bob Dylan is my hero. I could put all 8 songs Bob Dylan. Really amazing. He's done it all, really, in terms of music, and I could speak for hours about him, but to pick a single song out, I've gone for If You See Her, Say Hello. Just a beautiful love song that shows that Bob is more than just a lyricist and writer, and people think he has a scratchy voice, but I totally disagree with that. I think his voice is so full of emotion and is so crystal clear. And that song is just beautiful.
If you see her, say hello. She might be in Tangier. She left here last early spring. Is living there, I hear. Say for me that I'm all right. Though things get kind of slow, she might think that I've forgotten her. Don't tell her it isn't so. We had a falling out, like lovers often will. And to think of how she left that night, it still brings me a chill. And though our separation, it pierced me to the heart, she still lives inside of me. We've never been apart. If you get close to her, kiss her once for me. Always have respected her for doing what she did and getting free. Oh, whatever makes her happy, I won't stand in the way. Oh, the bitter taste still lingers on from the night I tried to make her stay. I see a lot of people as I make their rounds, and I hear her name here and there as I go from town to town. And I've never gotten used to it. I've just learned to turn it off. Either I'm too sensitive or else I'm getting soft. Sundown, yellow moon, I replay the past. I know every scene by heart, they all went by so fast. If she's passing back this way, I'm not that hard to find. Tell her can look me up if she's got the
time. Number two?
It's The Selfish Gene by Richard Dawkins, which I read as a teenager a long time ago. And it was massively important. At that time, he wasn't known as a famous atheist. And he was a very eminent biologist. And it's a biology book, but really made people understand genetics much more clearly, and how the direct impact it has on who we are. And he's also just a brilliant writer. It's very funny and crisp and so informative. It's a wonderful book, and it's something that has played a big part in my life as I became an atheist. I was definitely an agnostic, and now I'm an agnostic atheist. Wouldn't pretend to know whether God exists, but I act as though he doesn't. And The Selfish Gene was definitely the start of that journey for me.
And the second record?
Well, from the film Life of Brian, Monty Python's Always Look on the Bright Side of Life. Just a fun little ditty, really, but it just reminds me of the wonderful film, and it just brings a smile to my face. Sort of thing you need on a desert island.
Absolutely. I remember seeing The Life of Brian when I was a teenager in our little local cinema. I went with my whole family, and it was just utterly hilarious and wonderful.
Some things in life are bad. They can really make you mad. Other things just make you swear and curse.
When you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble, give a whistle, and this'll help things turn out for the best. And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten, and that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps, just purse your lips and whistle, that's the thing. Hey,
always look on the bright side of life.
Come on.
Always look on the bright side of life.
Life is quite absurd, and death's the final word. You must always face the curtain with a bow. Forget about your scene, give the audience a grin. Enjoy it, it's your last chance anyhow.
So always look on the bright side of death. Just before you draw your terminal breath.
A piece of spit when you look at it. Life's a laugh and death's a joke, it's true. You'll see it's all a show. Keep them laughing as you go. Just remember that the last laugh is on you.
And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the right side of life.
Days, especially you old people. All you're going to do is sit around and moan as you take your teeth away. Now come on, girls, put the kettle on, have a nice cup of tea. That's it. All right, come on, you groovy disc jockey. Better get this rubbish off now.
Okay, so now we're on to book number three.
This is a writer I loved as a young man. Certainly a teenager and then into my 20s, and I haven't really read much of him since then. It's Kurt Vonnegut, not very famous, but he wrote a quite extraordinary book called Slaughterhouse-Five. It is a partially true story, although with crazy flights of fancy as well, and the true part of it was that he was in Dresden in World War II as a prisoner of war, when the Allies firebombed the city. The bombing was worse than Hiroshima, and he was in the middle of it. When they heard the bombers come over, they put the prisoners of war and the guards into a pig slaughterhouse, which is the only reason they survived. It was a bit of a dungeon with very thick walls, and the next day, they battered the door down and came out to an extraordinary wilderness where he said that the floor had melted. And he said he walked across a melted ground that was a mixture of buildings, cars, people, horses, all melted and mixed together. The firebomb was so hot that it used up all the oxygen, so most of the people died of asphyxiation before they then got burned. And the guards ran away, and he simply walked out of Dresden as a free man. So really extraordinary story about the banality of war.
Incredible. And many more books by Kurt Vonnegut, and essays and letters. Very interesting man.
He's also a wit and another writer where every sentence counts and is beautifully crafted and funny. The way I introduced that makes it sound like some difficult read, but it's not. It's virtually a comedy.
And the fourth record?
Well, I'm making it the third record, is Hey Hey My My. Hey Hey, or is it My My Hey Hey? I think he sings it both ways. My My Hey Hey by my other great idol, Neil Young, the Canadian folk singer who is the godfather of grunge. So when Kurt Cobain killed himself, his suicide note referred to a Neil Young song with the line, "It's better to burn out than to fade away." And Hey Hey My is just one of many songs I could have picked by Neil Young who I just love.
Hey, hey, my, my.
Excellent. So now this is the fourth book, I think. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. Well, this is a book that is on many people's top 10 list. It tends to win when people get polled about what their favourite book is, Catch 22. It's the sort of book, and I do this quite often, where you just pick it up, flick to any page, read any sentence, and you'll probably laugh. It's just so clever, and again about the banality of war. The hero is in World War II, asking, why is Hitler trying to kill me? And his friends are saying, well, he's not trying to kill you personally. He said, what difference does that make? And one of the great books.
Yes, and two very much on similar themes, satires on war. Okay, and this title feeds into that as well. So your fourth music track?
Is Heroes by David Bowie, who I loved as a teenager, and I still listen to and love his music to this day. When I taught at Clifton College, my wife and I were in the middle of the night when some robbers came in and stole our many things. We just slept through the whole experience, but they stole 17 Bob Dylan albums and something like 15 David Bowie albums. And I very foolishly replaced the albums with Greatest Hits, which is just not the same, particularly with Bowie. I would say Bowie rather than Bowie.
I never remember.
But because his albums were, it's something that's like lost now, the way people listen to music, that you don't listen to a whole album in order, but you should do with David Bowie. And so again, picking a single song out isn't the right way to listen to Bowie, but Heroes is just a wonderful atmospheric song.
Forever and ever.
There's a few public thinkers that I like Richard Dawkins, whose reputation is, well, he's basically, you either love him or you hate him. You love him if you're an atheist and you hate him if you're a Christian. That seems to be the way it works. Yeah. This guy is slightly less controversial, although not without controversy, is a guy called Steven Pinker, who is just the clearest writer I've ever read of non-fiction. The first book I read of his was called The Language Instinct, which at the time was a big controversy about, is language built into us, or do we learn it? Now, obviously, we learn it from our parents, but to what extent is it hardwired into our mind? And at the time, we had this idea of a blank slate, and you'll hear educationalists talking about this, which is very much the wrong way to think about the human mind, because it is now shown that the mind is not a blank slate, and particularly for example, language, we are hardwired to pick up language incredibly quickly. Language is incredibly complicated, and we, without ever being taught it, we learn to speak. We simply observe our parents chatting away and talking to us, and somehow we work out how to make sentences. It is amazing. And again, as I said, Pinker is such a clear writer and such a funny writer. Again, it's a book you can pick any page out, read any sentence, and it'll be, you know, cut down to the exact precise length, and it'll be witty. And I've read many of his books, but that was the first and the one that had the biggest effect on me. And I went on to study. I did a master's in the computing understanding of human speech, which at the time computers were really bad at.
Okay, your fifth record.
Well, this is the first one of a proper band. All the others have been individuals. This was a band that I love called Joy Division, and they a bit of a sort of underground band, and they played as a group until their lead singer killed himself, and they then reformed as a new band called New Order, who I also loved. So this is Joy Division, She's Lost Control, and it's really extraordinary when you go to YouTube and see them play. The lead singer is absolutely freaky, and it's the only band that's had several films made about them. The film Control is brilliant, and there's a comedy film called 24-Hour Party People, in which they play a major part in the form of New Order, that is just really, really funny.
I do remember a very good watching New Order at the Brixton Academy. That was excellent.
Yes.
That was in their latter years, quite recently. Yes. Brilliant. They're quite old now.
By the hand and said, I lost control again. And how
Excellent. So now we're coming to your sixth book.
Yeah, I'd say this is the best book of my eight. Certainly in terms of the way it's written. I, Claudius, by Robert Graves, is the story of the Emperor Claudius. I became very interested in classical history quite a few years ago now, and so I read this book maybe 10 years ago, or a bit longer, and it's written by a poet. This is not the same as reading Pinker or Dawkins with a very precise, sort of witty, fast language. This is written by, a genius and at writing. He's a poet, a translator, a classicist, and author himself.
Historical novelist.
And I, Claudius, is a funny romp through the life of the most unlikely of all emperors, Claudius, who probably had cerebral palsy or some such quite severe disability and was hidden away in embarrassment by his family. This is real. This is not fiction. But basically, because everybody else got killed, he ended up as emperor. And this is his story. And he's known as Claudius because of his stutter. And he's just so likable in the book. And as Robert Graves says, everything that's in the book could have happened. We don't know what happened. We only know the basics. It was 2,000 years ago. But everything that he says that he wrote could have happened within the parameters of what's knowable. And so it is a history book. But as I said, just beautifully written.
And was that also made into a film or several films? I think there was a BBC film
about BBC series.
Right.
Which I haven't actually watched and I'm desperate to see. It's on YouTube, but in very sort of low, grainy quality. Mm. And it definitely has this dated feel. But that doesn't matter because it's sort of, that's the nature of it. And so that is a must watch for me at some point.
Well, I think you'll have made the classics department happy with that choice, hopefully. And the sixth track?
Well, this is New Order. So pretty quickly after their lead singer... and who wrote the lyrics of their songs died, they reformed as a new group with an entirely new style. Rather than this underground, quite heavy, low production quality music of Joy Division, they just turned into this pop band, really. But they were miles ahead of their time. They used sampling techniques, they had... you know, computer drumming and things like that, that were just nobody else other than Kraftwerk in Germany were doing this. Kraftwerk visited them to get some ideas about what they were doing. And all the music that the kids listen to today is influenced to a small extent by New Order. And they had just the most interesting... attitude that they really were not in it to make money or to become stars. They just liked doing it. They had a nightclub in Manchester called the Hacienda Club, and they just lost huge amounts of money through it. It got taken over by drug dealers, and they completely lost control of it. And you've got to watch the film 24-Hour Party People, which charts this, mm-hmm. and hilariously. But they also produced many just great songs. And one of those groups, it's pretty hard to pick one out in this sort of thing, but I went for Ceremony. Thank you.
Okay, and your next book?
Well, this is a book very important to our family, a series of books called His Dark Materials, one of the great children's books of all time, but written just a few years ago.
I think it was 1998, round about that.
Right.
Yes, so and, it was the 90s.
So I read them and just loved them. And then as the kids were growing up, I was trying to find the right moment to get them to read them. But before that moment came, we were living in Italy, and I decided to recite the story to them. So every other night, my wife would read to them on one night, and then the next night I would recite a small bit of His Dark Materials. And it took months to go through the three books. And it is an incredible world of parallel universes, very similar to our own. One of them is our own. And then there's another world that is very similar to ours. And, you know, the protagonist, Lyra, is this sort of vibrant young girl who navigates all of this and bends people to her will and confronts God himself and witches and just everything. It's absolutely amazing. And I was very emotional when I came to the last page. I was not reading, but reciting. But when I came to the very end, when it's all over, with the kids sort of goggle-eyed to tell it. So I wrote, I drew a illustrated version of it, which I like, and it's just part of our family history.
I think we haven't said that's by Philip Pullman, and it's a trilogy. So His Dark Materials is a trilogy, with the first one being The Northern Lights.
Yeah.
And just the most incredible imagination, but so much philosophy really about, you know, it's a fable, it's fantasy, but there's so much to it. And I hope that young people will still keep reading that today. There's just been the wonderful BBC series, which I think was done really well. If you haven't seen that, that's fantastic. So that's another way of sparking the book, interest in the book again.
Yeah, there's been a film that was really disappointing. And then the BBC TV series was okay, but nothing. You simply can't match writing when the author has this fantasy world, because it's already in your head. Whatever they do isn't right.
But the film was terrible, and the BBC programme I thought was exciting and well done, and the characters were good. Lyra was fantastic. Okay, and we are now on to the seventh track, your penultimate track.
Well, Tim Minchin is a comedian, a musical comedian. And go to YouTube and watch one or two of his songs. He is great fun. He did the music and the words to the Matilda musical that is excellent. And so I like Tim Minchin, but the thing I have by him is called Storm, which is as he said, here's one for the kids. It's a 15-minute beat poem. And somebody has created an illustrated version of it. So it's in book form, but it's also a song, almost a song, a beat poem. And it is about a dinner party where Tim Minchin goes to this dinner party with a couple of mates, and they have a young person from Australia who's come to visit. They don't really know her. They're putting her up, and she is a bit of a hippie. She's into homeopathy and things like that, and Tim Minchin gets a bit drunk and then rips into her about her sort of spiritual beliefs, and it is absolutely brilliant.
This is a 9-minute beat poem. It's called Storm.
In
Inner North London, top floor, flat, all white walls, white carpet, white cat, rice paper partitions, modern art and ambition. The host's a physician, bright bloke, has his own practice. His girlfriend's an actress, an old mate of ours from home. And they're always great fun, so to dinner we've come. The fifth guest is an unknown. The hosts have just thrown us together as a favour because this girl's just arrived from Australia and she's moved to North London and she's the sister of someone or has some connection. As we make introductions, I'm struck by her beauty. She's irrefutably fair with dark eyes and dark hair. But as she sits, I admit I'm a little bit wary because I notice the tip of the wing of a fairy tattooed on that popular area just above the derriere. And when she says, "I'm Sagittarian," I confess a pigeonhole starts to form and is immediately filled with pigeon when she says her name is Storm. Conversation is initially bright and light-hearted, but it's not long before Storm gets started. "You can't know anything. Knowledge is merely opinion," she opines over her Cabernet Sauvignon vis-a-vis some unhippily empirical comment made by me. Not a good start, I think. We're only on pre-dinner drinks, and across the room, my wife widens her eyes, silently begs me, "Be nice." A matrimonial warning not worth ignoring, so I resist the urge to ask Storm whether knowledge is so loose weave of a morning when deciding whether to leave her apartment by the front door or the window on her second floor. The food is delicious, and Storm, whilst avoiding all meat, happily sits and eats as the good doctor, slightly pissedly, holds court on some anachronistic aspect of medical history, when Storm suddenly insists, "But the human body is a mystery. Science just falls in a hole when it tries to explain the nature of the soul." My hostess throws me a glance. She, like my wife, knows there's a chance I'll be off on one of my rare but fun rants, but I shan't. My lips are sealed. I just want to enjoy the meal. And although Storm is starting to get my goat, I have no intention of rocking the boat. Although it's becoming a bit of a wrestle, because like her meteorological namesake, Storm has no such concerns for our vessel. Pharmaceutical companies are the enemy. They promote drug dependency at the cost of the natural remedies that all our bodies need.
Excellent. Now, I think because we've made so many changes to the books and the order and the numbers, that you have more than eight books. So I make this your final eighth book. Is
yes.
that correct? But I still have two on my list. So is this one?
So I've got Circe.
Yes.
By who is it by?
Madeline Miller.
Madeline Miller.
Classicist and writer.
That is, Odysseus was on his way home from the Trojan Wars, and that journey is charted in the Odyssey, one of the great classics books. And he, on his way back, he has lots of adventures, and one of them is his men and him get trapped on an island, and his men get turned into pigs by a local minor goddess, or is she a witch? And he dines at her table and is her lover and things like that. And then he goes on to many other adventures. And this book is about her, the goddess, and includes the Odysseus section, but other parts of her life as well. And so it's woven around Greek myth, but it brings it to life as though she is a real person with attitudes and feelings, and it's just magical. It's just wonderful, and so I just, although I didn't really expect to, I just loved reading it.
I have to say it's been incredibly popular in our whole family. I haven't read the book, but I listened to the audiobook recently, and that is beautifully done. It is utterly enchanting. You just want to keep listening to it. The narration is amazing and the writing is brilliant. She also wrote Song of Achilles, which lots of people have enjoyed, and it's a fantastic, another fantastic book. Okay, so I think sadly didn't the Cicero trilogy by Robert Harris get slightly squeezed out?
Oh, did it?
You needed more choices, but obviously that's another of your favourite recommendations.
Well, I had two classicists.
Yeah.
Or yes, two. So I thought three. I originally had four classics tracks, but so I've cut that down to two.
And I know you also love a good crime novel, a good thriller, but
oh, yeah.
We couldn't squeeze them in, but obviously they're another genre that you enjoy. And the final song?
Yeah, just an amazing song. I've not seen them live, and when they play this song live, the whole place just simply goes mental. It's Rage Against the Machine, Killing in the Name, which is just so full of energy. I really love the group. I love their attitude. They are sort of anti-fascist activists. One lovely story about them is that everyone got fed up with X Factor becoming the Christmas number one with some awful, soppy reworking of somebody else's song. And just the worst type of music, sadly, so incredibly popular. I've never watched X Factor, but I'm sure it's terrible. And so somebody said, right, we're going to try and get a different song on as Christmas number one. And they picked Killing in the Name. Even though it was 8 years old, it had already been through the charts. But a campaign of buying it got it onto the number one spot at Christmas and knocked off whoever awful person would have been number one with the X Factor winner. And I thought that was wonderful. And the group embraced it. And then because they were Christmas number one, the BBC asked them to play live. Now, the song has a lot of swearing in it, and the BBC said to them, please don't swear. But if you listen to the song, the whole point of the song and the chorus is, I will not do what you tell me to do. So I really don't know what the BBC expected to happen here. But sure enough, on live TV, they launched into, about 2 minutes into the song, launched into the way that they'd written the song, and they didn't compromise. So whoever had his finger hovering over the button pressed it pretty quick.
A lot of beeping.
And then there was, we apologise that, they moved on to the next thing. But that sums up the group. They're just going to do their thing, and good for them.
Justified, don't deny, but wearing the badge, yeah, you're chosen white. Don't Some of those that were forces are the same that brought crosses. Some of those that were forces are the same that brought crosses. Some of those that were forces are the same that brought crosses. Killing in the name of. Now you do what they told ya. 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 You're under control. Now you do what they told ya. You're under control. Now you do what they told ya. You're under control. Now you do what they told ya. Now you're under control. Now you do what they told ya. Now you're under control. Now you do what they told ya. You're under control. Now you do what they told ya.
You had to choose one disc to take to the island. You were only allowed one, which is the one you couldn't do without.
Well, I suppose
to play it over again.
Bob Dylan. It's got to be Bob.
And
obviously, it's a shame to only have one song. I've listened to that song so many times. I think I could continue to listen to it very happily so many more times.
Is that one you're playing on the guitar?
Well, I play the guitar. That would be my luxury.
Yeah.
So I'm taking a guitar with me and I play it. That song I've never succeeded at. Sometimes the original author, typically for me, Bob or Neil Young, are just too good. And I'm rubbish at the guitar. So to take on the real classics sometimes just doesn't work, and that one I just can't make work. But that's all right, because I'll be able to listen to it.
But you'd have a lot of time to play on this island, and you'd have time to read your book over and over again, because we're only allowing you one book.
Yes.
So which book out of your list?
Well, first of all, I am allowed the Bible and
the complete works of Shakespeare,
which I'd be very pleased about. One, the Bible, the King James Version 1611 is... along with the works of Shakespeare, also around 1611 and slightly before, are the cornerstones of our language. And so I would greatly enjoy reading the Bible and the Shakespeare and trying to understand the Shakespeare. I don't pretend to be, the sort of person who reads Shakespeare, but I would become that person. So I'd be very pleased with the compulsory books. But the book I would take with me would be I, Claudius, because it's a true work of art, and therefore is, and I have read it a few times, but because it's art, it would stand the test of time and the sort of book you can read many, many times. By the way, there is also a sequel, Claudius the God. which is equally brilliant.
And if you had to just recommend one page turner for if people want a summer read, have you got a thriller you love?
Well, I would strongly recommend Factfulness.
Of course.
Because I read a mixture of non-fiction and fiction, and Factfulness is in the type of non-fiction that I like, that it's fun. It's fun to read, and yet it's profoundly important. And like the language instinct and the selfish gene, they are page-turners, these books. You shouldn't think that it's because it's non-fiction, it's just dull facts. That's not what good non-fiction writing is. And those three books are not in any way dull. They're written by people who are brilliant at writing. It's just a different type of writing to Robert Graves.
Absolutely. And just for anyone who doesn't know, who hasn't heard me banging on about it, Factfulness by Hans Rosling is our big Wellington summer read, which really makes us think about the world, challenge our worldview, learn a lot more about health, development, medicine and crime and poverty, and really think about that, but in a very engaging way, in an interesting way. So I hope that you'll all be reading that along with your other books. And we look forward to more of these, look forward to hearing more other Desert Island Discs and books from other staff and students. So this is just the first one. Thanks for listening.